All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg. I will be joined here in a minute by my usual co-host, David Rommel, as well as the host of Locked On Cavs, Chris Manning. We are breaking down everything Kyrie Irving trade-related, from the Heat's angle and from the Cavaliers' angle. It's a Locked On crossover, so it's a little bit different. But before we get to that, I want to tell you about SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to the live events that you want to see. Their seamless mobile experience lets you buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way that I found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere in just a few taps. I can instantly find seats. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, they grade every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you could shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off of their first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LONBA today. That's promo code LONBA for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Now, a Locked On crossover with Locked On Heat and Locked On Cavs. Enjoy.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So it's a big Locked On Network crossover. I'm Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs.
I'm Wes Goldberg with Locked On Heat.
David Rommel, also with Locked On Heat.
So we're obviously here to talk about Kyrie Irving. The Heat are one of the teams that are interested in Kyrie, that have kicked the tires on him. There is a value that they have said they would deal for him. They've refuted that publicly, if I'm not mistaken. But they're one of the, to me, one of the more interesting teams. And I'm kind of curious on your guys' end. Let's just start with the obvious. Like, do you like the idea of the Heat being one of the teams in on Kyrie Irving?
I love the idea that Miami would be interested in Kyrie Irving. I love the idea that Kyrie Irving is interested in the Heat. It makes all the sense in the world if you're Kyrie Irving, right? You don't have stability in Cleveland, right? Your general manager is gone. You've had a couple of coaches within the last 3 years. And maybe you're just saying, hey, I want to be on a team that has stability in the coaching staff, has stability in the front office, knows how to build a championship team around a superstar player. And I think I'm a superstar player, and I want to go be numero uno somewhere else because I can't be that in Cleveland. I love the idea of Miami getting Kyrie Irving, because if you're the Heat, you need a superstar. Goran Dragic and Deion Waiters and James Johnson and Hassan Whiteside and all these guys that kind of came together last season, that was a lot of fun. And maybe you could carry that on going into next season. I just don't know what kind of ceiling that team has. And you need superstars in this league. And Kyrie Irving is a superstar. And he's 25 years old and he's still getting better. And if you believe what he says, that he still has another level to get to, but he can't do it in Cleveland, then that's promising if you're a team that's trading for him. And if he wants to be in Miami, then you have assurance that he wants to re-sign long-term. And all of a sudden, the Heat have a superstar where they didn't have a route to a superstar. You lose on Gordon Hayward. You lose out on Kevin Durant 2 years ago. You just can't get a superstar post-LeBron James. And here is one that wants to play for you, and you could get at possibly a bargain. I know David is a little... David and I have talked about this a lot on Locked On Heat, and he's a little bit more hesitant than I am. I'm kind of all in. He almost talked me out of it, though, once, right?
Well, I mean, I like the idea of acquiring Kyrie from a macro point of view. And yes, I totally agree. That's probably the most likely scenario for acquiring a quote-unquote superstar in the short term. And you don't know how soon another superstar, potentially player, will be available. But at the same time, in the micro view, how he fits onto this roster as it's currently constructed, I don't like the fit. I don't know that necessarily he can fit alongside Deion Waiters. There are defensive issues, which I'm willing to overlook. I know he can certainly score the ball. I know there are defensive problems that are probably overstated at this point. But I just don't know if he necessarily fits to the way that this team is geared and built currently. You acquired a couple of players in free agency, mainly Kelly Olynyk. You re-signed James Johnson. You re-signed Deion Waiters. You're looking to rebuild this team from what they saw in the last half of last year when Miami went 31-10. And I think Goron at the helm makes this team better than Kyrie does right now. Maybe that's a short-term view, but at the same time, I think this team would be better next year. And I'm not so sure if you're willing to reboot how you build this team just by acquiring Kyrie. It sets you back two steps so that maybe you can go three steps forward.
I don't know if I agree with that he takes you back two steps. Like, and I get the way you're saying about Dragic, and I think Dragic, like, fits the system of what Spoelstra does, like, really, really well. I think, like, offensively, he would just give you something that, I know Deion thinks he's this.
Yes.
But, like, he would give you just, I mean, he is. Like, Deion's the greatest player of all time. Who am I kidding? But
100%.
I really need, but just as an aside, I need him to, like, actually put out those t-shirts. Like, the
Which
bet
ones?
On yourself and double down shirts.
Yeah, yeah.
I need them. Like,
I would
need
buy
one.
Them. There is not an amount of money I wouldn't pay.
I'm like really mad at myself.
We predicted that Deion will be the leading scorer on this Heat team next season for sure.
Yeah. I kind of mad at myself for like not buying the arms crossed like B-boy swag shirt that they did.
I know.
But, I'm really mad at myself for that. But like Kyrie would give you just like this guy who you could just like functionally try to build an offense around. And I do think like it's one of the unanswered questions I have. And it's I know, you know, we're like thinking about like the upcoming, there's an upcoming week, I'll just say that at the step back, that like talks about like things that could have been what ifs.
Yeah.
Like Kyrie Irving in a David Blatt motion offense is one of the things I kind of would have really liked to see. Like where he isn't just like being told to do iso ball, where he actually is
like if LeBron had not gone, LeBron had not gone to Cleveland and it was just David Blatt with a young team with Kyrie Irving and Andrew Wiggins and a young Tristan Thompson and Deion Waiters.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to see that.
I mean, David is completely right that Kyrie Irving doesn't fit the drive and kick scheme that Miami likes to use. Like, Kyrie Irving is one of the best finishers in the game, but he's not necessarily a great kicker, even though if you believe the reports, he thinks he could be, and maybe that's true, but we just haven't seen it. But at the same time, I think the talent of Kyrie Irving would outweigh the chemistry problems that there would be, right? Because there's no doubt that he's more talented than Goran Dragic. And we saw from this Heat team 2 years ago, it didn't mesh as nearly as well as the Heat team last year, right? But it did make the playoffs. It advanced into the second round, despite it being this weird backcourt of Goran Dragic, Dwayne Wade, Joe Johnson, who was added in the middle of the season, just like a roster that never really fit completely well together. But there was just so much more talent on that team than last year that team ended up getting into the playoffs. The chemistry and the style of play was super fun on the second half of last season, and I'd love to see what that team could do. But I just think the talent of Kyrie Irving in the NBA, that can make up for so many other deficiencies.
Yeah,
Are you willing to sacrifice this season, whatever the ceiling on this season might be? You and I have talked on the podcast before about potentially reaching 50 wins, maybe placing anywhere around the fourth through sixth seed. You'd be willing to sacrifice this season to see if maybe you can trade away a few other players that are currently on the roster in the hopes of rebuilding it with Kyrie and presumably Hassan Whiteside as your centerpieces?
Well, I would be open to trading Whiteside, but yeah, I think if the Heat could trade for Kyrie Irving, I'd be willing to just say, you know what? Let's just let that be a giant what if. What if this team came back? And just kind of let that live in Heat lore for the rest of our lives. That's actually a little bit more exciting, like that open-ended question, than it would be to see maybe this team just kind of win 48 games and just be meh. You know what I mean? Like, that would be disappointing. And look, I want to see this team back. I really do. But I just don't know how long we could live with this kind of team. Like, if it would be fun to watch this team come back and win 48 or 50 games, but would it be fun next season? Would it be fun the season after that? At some point, you've got to make a move, and I don't know when the next Kyrie Irving comes available. And if this is the case, I think you got to do it, especially if you're Miami. You don't have other ways to build on this team. They don't. They're locked in. This is the team, unless you make some sort of gigantic move, and that would be like a Kyrie Irving trade, presumably.
And I would, I would note this too. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was wondering, from the outsider, quote-unquote outsider's perspective, do you think Kyrie is the kind of player, as he's currently built, that you could add to a team like Miami and continue to build, if not for this season, for the future? Is he that kind of a player?
I think he is. Like, I don't think he's necessarily like a finished product. Like, he's had like a very good career so far. You know, like, he's won a title. Like, he's done all these things. He's very, very good at what he does. I think, like, there's still room for growth for him. I think, if he was to become a member of the Heat, he would have to get better at throwing lobs to a guy like Hassan Whiteside. Mm-hmm. He would have to, I think, buy a little bit more into the drive and kick. But I think he might do that. Like, I think, especially because I don't know if you guys are necessarily agree with this, and I think it would take some adjustment, but he, like, might be the guy. Like, he would probably be the guy when he got there. Like, Deion would probably still take a lot of shots. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting, too, that, like, if Kyrie did end up Miami, like, he would be leaving Cleveland to go to the same franchise LeBron did.
Right.
Like, that's like, a very interesting thing, as is, like, the beef. Like, there's still, like, some frosty relations between these two teams. Like, it's not like mm-hmm. they're, like, super, like, friendly and willing to deal with each other. And I think that certainly plays a factor in it. But, like, he would be the guy. He would get Pat Riley, and you'd have him for 2 years. So it's not like you'd be getting Paul George to do this. So I think you'd grow. And I would know, too, like, I think David makes a really good point, or Wes makes a really good point. You all made really good points. But, like, you don't know when the next guy is I'm talking so fast. You don't know when the next guy is going to become available. And, like, if you wait, and Anthony Davis is the next guy, Boston has more to give up. Like, this is just an opportunity where, like, you realistically, depending on how the market shakes out, because it's a saturated position, because of the timing, because of all these different things, Kyrie's, like, gettable if you have the right package.
I was hoping Boston would trade for Paul George, right? Because if they did, they'd have to give up so many assets to get him that all of a sudden Miami is back in the running for the next all-star who becomes available, right? And Kyrie Irving is this rare case where he is available. He listed Miami, but not Boston on his list of teams that he wants to go to, probably because Boston has Isaiah Thomas, I would imagine. Now, there's been a lot of kind of trades on NBA Twitter kicked around, Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder, some other pieces for Kyrie Irving. I don't know that Boston does that. We've gotten no inclination that they'd be willing to do something like that. So this is the rare case where, yes, Boston has the assets to beat any offer that Miami can make relatively easily, right? If they wanted to, but they might not, you know? And that really puts Miami in position here because, Chris, you're exactly right. The next star that becomes available, I don't know if Miami's even in the conversation. And they gave up two first-round picks for Goran Dragic, and I still love that trade for Miami. But what ended up happening was that now you don't have – and they've traded so many second-round picks. They have no draft picks until 2023 that they could trade. They don't have a whole lot of players that are really available or enticing to other teams. We could talk about Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson, but this roster – as of now, isn't in position to make a move. Just the idea that they're in the conversation for Kyrie Irving, it kind of ups the motivation for me for the Miami Heat to get it done.
Well, I still have to dispute the whole potential whether or not a superstar becomes available. Just looking at the past 5 months and looking at DeMarcus Cousins, Jimmy Butler, Gordon Hayward, potentially Kyrie Irving, Paul George, all switching teams. I mean,
superstars David, can move. Were any of them, were the Miami Heat involved in any of those players?
Well, I think they could have made a trade for Boogie if they had been willing to do so. I think they certainly were in the running for Gordon Hayward. They were one of three teams that apparently were. They probably could have thrown their hat into the Paul George ring if they thought that he might re-sign there at the end of the year. Jimmy Butler, who knows whether or not they ever engage Chicago in talks for him. But and Kyrie has already listed Miami as a potential destination. So it's like Miami still is one of the preferred landing areas for superstar players, I think, just because of the culture, the stability, and all the things that we believe Kyrie sees in the Miami franchise. So as far as the ability to acquire a franchise-altering player, I think you'll still have that opportunity. You never know when a player will become disenfranchised. I mean, we didn't expect Kyrie to be on the market at the end of the season. No. He was supposed to be there competing for championships next year with LeBron and presumably the year after, even if LeBron leaves. I mean, he was going to still be part of the Cavs team for the next two seasons and possibly beyond. And all of a sudden, he's become available. We didn't expect Jimmy Butler to be moved this offseason. Paul George, who knew where he was going to wind up? It's just the landscape on the league can change very quickly. And so I think if you're going to start trading away what's already a good fit and something that you can continue to build on, I don't know that you necessarily want to do so for Kyrie.
That's fair. That's completely fair. But how many of those players were better than Kyrie Irving? How many players, just in general, regardless of if they're tradable or if we anticipate that they may be on the trade block or free agents anytime soon, are just better as a future player, as a future asset with the potential and ceiling, everything involved? How many players in this league are better than Kyrie Irving?
I hear you. You're right. Absolutely right. I mean,
okay. I think Chris can attest to this. Kyrie Irving in like the game four of the Celtics game in the game four of the Eastern Conference Finals, when LeBron had the foul trouble and went to the bench, Cleveland was losing. Kyrie Irving brings that team back and wins that game. Kyrie Irving against the Warriors, making that defense look like nothing at times, like just unbelievable offensive performances. I just don't know how many other players in the history of this game could do that. That's the kind of player I want in Miami. And maybe he's not the superstar and a championship player you could build around. But I also know Miami doesn't have that player right now. And I'd be willing to take that chance on Kyrie Irving, because just as far as odds, I don't know what other players in the league that aren't currently of that caliber can get there. And I think Kyrie has a chance.
And I also would note, too, that I think it's – I agree with what David's saying. I also think it's like – some of these things are unexpected. It's also just relative to like what guys do and like contracts and all this stuff. And like if Anthony Davis becomes available, like he's going to get a lot more than like what most teams could offer. Like if Paul George had been on a longer contract, like he probably could have.
Right.
Or if Kevin Pritchard wasn't going to be like, yeah, I'll take Victor Oladipo. That's into bonus. That's fine. That's enough. Like, you know, like these things are tricky, and it all depends on context and all these things. But
in Sacramento's front office thought that Buddy Hield was Steph Curry. So that's right. Why they made that trade.
Shoots like Steph, big like Clay. Right. Buddy Hield. these things are like really tricky. And I do think like if you're Pat Riley, I feel like you think you can mold Kyrie if you think you fit him. And I think like you believe in your system. And I think like there are certain situations where like I think Kyrie would do well, but I don't necessarily know if like it would push him to the next level. Like the Knicks are one of these situations where like I think he might do really, really well. I wonder if that organization can bring him up a lot. I think the Heat, just because of what we know about that culture, and like I think him and LeBron, there is something to the idea that he like wants the bigger role, right? But I also think like the Cavs franchise is something like I think he wants the opposite of that. So you look at like what he's really had in his career. He had a really good rookie year, and then they're like, okay, we're going to take another ball dominant guard instead of taking your friend from AAU and Harrison Barnes, because they take Dan Waiters. You have the different coaches. You have all these different things that kind of were weird, and then it's like, okay, like we're going to give you David Blatt and this big contract, and you're going to be our guy. And then it's like, okay, well, LeBron's coming, so we're going to like change everything you wanted to do. And like, of course you change it for LeBron, but it didn't seem like there was like any expectation that he was coming back. And I think Kyrie kind of, right. It's not like LeBron picked Kyrie more so than Kyrie picked LeBron.
Kyrie didn't really buy in. He was kind of like forced into the relationship.
And it worked really well for him. Right. And like they won a title, and he hit the biggest shot in franchise history. Like it wasn't LeBron. Like
the second biggest shot in NBA Finals history.
Yeah. Ray Allen's number one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll flip those and we'll agree to disagree. But, like, these things are tough. And, like, I think the where this kind of leads to is the Heat have two things, I think, in, like, if you define them this way, that would make sense for the Cavs on their wish list. And if listeners don't know, what the Cavs reportedly want is veteran help, whether that's multiple players, whether that's one veteran. They want a young blue chip guy that they define as a blue chip guy. We don't really know what their definition of blue chip is, because we've heard like no linkage to like a guy they're targeting, and they want a pick. So what we know, at least like what has been reported, that the Heat would give up for Kyrie, and then they've refuted, is Justice Winslow and Goran Dragic. Dragic gives you the veteran help. He gives you a good replacement of point guard. He's not Derrick Rose. I think that's a win in itself. Winslow, 2 years in the league, still really young, coming off labrum surgery, has not proven to be a shooter or a good offensive player yet. And like it's a question of whether he gets there. I've taken crap for this on Twitter from people like Cavs fans, and I want to hear what you guys think about this. I don't like love that return. It's not what I would like jump out and just take it. I would try to bargain. I would try to use it as leverage to get a better offer from a team like the Suns. I also don't think like it's unreasonable to think that they could end up with something like that or that some version of that deal with maybe one other player or some future pick in there, just because saturated position, kind of hard to like find the exact right spot for him to like, and if teams don't like him because of certain things, like I don't think like they're getting a mellow deal like they supposedly want. So like if those check your boxes, like maybe that's how this sort of works out.
I mean, from the Heat based perspective, I tend to think it's a solid return. And one of the things Wes and I keep talking about ever since the Kyrie rumors first came out is how interesting the whole scenario has been, and seeing how fans, writers, everybody tends to overvalue players that they tend to root for or follow more closely, perhaps. So I think you're always going to get a very skewed perspective when it comes to analyzing what's fair and what's not. But I can tell you that I think personally that one of the reasons why I don't necessarily fall into the whole acquisition of Kyrie is because I am such a Goran Dragic fan. I think what he does is so exceptional. He's a great shooter. He's a great shooter from mid-range, from long range. He's also very good at finishing at the rim. Clearly not the athlete that Kyrie Irving is. He's much slower overall and more deliberate as he drives to the hoop, but he finishes at an extremely efficient level at the rim. He draws a lot of contact. He doesn't get a lot of foul calls. He just seems to be a guy, and Wes and I have talked about this a number of times, he's just a guy who's not valued very highly around the league, I think. You know, he's never made an all-star team. He's never put up huge number. He's not going to average or even reach 30 points per game on more than one occasion. You know, it's very rare that he'll top 30 points, but he'll chip in 21, 22 every night that you need him to, and he'll do it from a variety of different ways. And I love the kind of leadership role that he's embraced and developed into over the last season without, you know, Dwayne Wade there on the roster. So I think Dragic is a really good return. When it comes to Winslow, obviously there are a lot of questions because of the injury last year, but what we saw last season was that they were grooming him to be a really good playmaker. And he's a guy who can create with the ball in his hands. He's very, very quick from end to end. He's a sharp passer. Again, he just didn't have that opportunity his rookie year, and then his sophomore year was cut short because of injury, because of him trying to do too much, and he looked ineffective most of the time. You look at the shooting numbers, clearly he's not a very good shooter, although I think that's something that he continues to work on and will continue to work on while he's in the league. But as a playmaker, he's really, I think there's potential for him to be a really effective playmaker. He'll find guys in a corner. He'll drive to the rim if need to. And as a defender, obviously, his rookie season in particular, we saw moments from him where he's an elite-level defender. He can get guys off the perimeter. He's got the heft to guard bigger players. He's very switchable on defense. He can guard 1 through 5. Even in a playoff game a couple of years ago, he played the center, started at the center position when Hassan Whiteside went down and they were going up against the Toronto Raptors. So there's a lot of different versatility there. There's a lot of versatility that you'd like in a player his age. And he's still just, 21 years old? He just turned 21. Yes. So there's much more potential to mine there. So as far as an overall return package, you're getting a real good potential player in Winslow whose shooting probably will come around more likely than not, a good potential playmaker and a very stable leader in Goran Dragic. There won't be much absence offensively, I think. And I think he's probably a better defender at this point, Dragic is, than Kyrie Irving, to be honest with you.
I mean, like, you know, when Kyrie's not engaged, you know, like a bucket of basketballs is like a better defender than Kyrie. You know, like it's harder to run through that bucket of basketballs than it is to run through Kyrie in the pick and roll, so...
Like, I love the idea of Winslow on Cleveland, too. I mean, other than the fact that I love Justice Winslow and I want him to be in Miami forever. But the idea of him being in Cleveland, he can kind of be the Cavaliers' Andre Iguodala, where, look, LeBron James had to guard Kevin Durant on one end and then play against Kevin Durant on the offensive end in the finals last year. Their best answer as a secondary perimeter defender was Iman Shumpert, who did an okay job for the first half of the finals and then really got taken advantage of, I thought, in the last couple of games. And the Cavaliers haven't been happy with Iman Shumpert. And or the salary that he's on. So if you add Winslow, that gives you another perimeter defender that now all of a sudden LeBron doesn't have to guard the best guy on the other team. You give that assignment to Justice Winslow. That allows LeBron James on the offensive end to thrive more than he even has been and to make up for whatever loss there is of Kyrie Irving, right? And yeah, Goran Dragic will help make up for that, but now all of a sudden you're getting a boosted LeBron James on offense possibly because he doesn't have to guard the best guy defensively anymore. The idea of Winslow there is almost what Cleveland lost when they traded away Andrew Wiggins for Kevin Love. You're getting that wing guy, that young wing guy that LeBron can help groom if he wants to be there long term. And if he just wants to be there for a season, Winslow's already an elite wing defender. I mean, elite. Like in his rookie year, he was fantastic on that end. Going to the playoffs, like David mentioned, he's extremely versatile. And that's a really good return, I think, if you're Cleveland. I get it if maybe they look at Winslow as, if LeBron James leaves next summer, where are we with this guy? Can he take a leap in 2 or 3 years? And that just comes down to their scouting department and what they think about him. But if you're Cleveland, if other teams like Phoenix and Minnesota aren't willing to throw in their young guys, like if Minnesota's not willing to throw in Andrew Wiggins, and I don't think that they should, and if Phoenix isn't willing to give away Josh Jackson because they're not sure if Kyrie Irving would stay long term, I don't know what other options are better if you're Cleveland. And I think that's kind of the point you're hitting on, Chris.
Yeah, so this is my sort of concern with the Kyrie thing. And I do think some of this does stem from the saturation of the position. So, like, the Knicks, in terms of, like, a fit for Kyrie would, like, make a lot of sense. Like, unless they're giving back Kristaps, like, they're sending Kristaps to Cleveland, there's no reason the Cavs should just deal with the Knicks. Like, their young players are interesting. They don't really fit with the Cavs sort of need or, like, seem to want. You also can't get a veteran starter back, so then you're into starting Derrick Rose. And I don't know, like, I actually don't have a good read on if they're comfortable with Derrick Rose being a starting point guard. They called him a backup.
No, I'm really not. I'm not against it.
I'm out on it. Yeah, but like the price is fine, but it's just like what he does is literally something no LeBron point guard has done since he went to the Heat. He cannot shoot. Like as a three-point shooter, Chalmers, Cole could shoot, and Kyrie could shoot, Dele could shoot, Deron Williams could shoot. Every point guard they've had around LeBron that he's had for like 8 years now or whatever has been a three-point shooter. And like Rose is just like, well, I'm going to drive to the rim and like kind of do stuff. You know, like that's my concern.
So you like the idea of Dragic and Winslow, right, as a return? But
I do. I do.
So here's the other idea I wanted to float out there. If Cleveland doesn't value Dragic, right, they say, look, he's on the other side of 31. If LeBron leaves, we don't view him as a building block. We need a building block. We need a younger player in return. If the Heat were to offer Hassan Whiteside, and let's just say they only offer Whiteside, right? Is that something that could start a conversation, do you think, with Cleveland? Is Hassan Whiteside enough of an upgrade over Tristan Thompson? And is he, at 28 years old, kind of a young foundational-ish piece that whether LeBron were to stay or if LeBron were to leave, at least you know you have a rim protector. At least you know you have one of the better centers in the Eastern Conference. Is that something that can get a conversation going, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know how they would view that. I don't necessarily think so. And I also just am in the camp of, like, unless you're getting, like, Kristaps back or something, I don't know if chasing a big man is, like, the right path. Like, right. I don't think Whiteside is as, like, good or bad as, like, some people think he is. I think he's fine. I think the rim protection would be good. I think, you know, he's got, like, he's exciting to a degree. I just don't know if, like, you add him to the Cavs next year, and, like, if you're trying to serve two purposes with him, I don't know if he fits the two purposes. One of the reasons that I think Winslow makes sense and Dragic makes sense, you look at Phoenix, that something like Jared Dudley and Bledsoe and whatever, like, that, like, and Jackson, if they could get him available, like, those things that make sense, is because, like, they serve purposes against Golden State. I don't know, like, if you put Hassan Whiteside on your team and you're trying to find minutes for him and Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson, because, like, Tristan, I haven't thought too much about this. I'm really just thinking this now. I don't know if it's necessarily true that Whiteside would be more valuable against Golden State than Thompson. Like, well, I don't
I've got
really
some
know.
Stats for you. I'm glad you brought that up because I looked this up this afternoon. In three games in the last two seasons against the Warriors, Whiteside is averaging 19.5 points, 12.5 rebounds, 1.8 blocks, and he's shooting 61.5% from the field. He's a plus 9 in those minutes. He's averaging 34 minutes a game.
I mean, look, Timofey Mozgov was good in the 2015 finals. Like big guys can do
that
against
Golden
State, you know?
Then he wasn't. Then he wasn't.
Look, shouts to Mozgov. Like, he got paid. My guy got paid. He's just
Tristan Thompson. Tristan Thompson, let's compare his stats against the Warriors. Five finals games, he averaged 5.6 points on 54.5% shooting, 5.8 rebounds, 0.6 blocks. And in the regular season, in two games, he averaged 7 points on 50% shooting, 6.5 rebounds. He was a combined minus 26.2 in all of those games. If you just go by the stats, and I know you can't, but if you just go by the stats, Whiteside is much better. And I can tell you from the eye test, when the Heat played the Warriors, especially when that one game that they won, they're 1-2 in those three games that Whiteside played against the Warriors. Whiteside played really well in that win. And there might be something to playing him at center against Golden State. Miami last season gave up the fewest or the second fewest, maybe behind only Utah, three-point attempts per game. And that was largely because their defense was based around Whiteside protecting the rim, and their perimeter defenders could be aggressive closing out the opposing shooters. That really helped their three-point defense. You're not going to be able to out Golden State. We saw that firsthand in the finals this last time around. But maybe, like, if there's a chance that you could beat Golden State, it might be something like Hassan Whiteside, who has played well against the Warriors. He's one of the few players in the league that plays well against the Warriors. It might work if you're Cleveland, right? If you're looking at these stats, that's a major upgrade over Tristan Thompson. Now, all of a sudden, you could kind of trade Tristan Thompson if you want, or bring him off the bench at $84 million contract, but whatever. I don't know. I kind of like the idea of Whiteside in Cleveland, to be honest.
I think you still would need the young guy. Like I do. Okay.
So
really,
what?
Like I,
so
I,
yeah. What like about you want? What about Winslow? Whiteside? So I'm not going to give you Winslow. That's not happening. But if the Heat give up Whiteside, I think Whiteside and Winslow might be a little too rich. I think they'd prefer Dragic and Winslow, but that's just me guessing. But you could do. What if you did like Whiteside and Josh Richardson? Is that
I don't
enough?
I don't know, because like Whiteside's age, I think, kind of takes him out. Like, if you're 20 years old,
he's not
a young player. Like, he's in his prime, and like he's not someone that can like help you. Like, I don't know if they would see him as this building block for the next generation of Cavs teams. Like, if you're thinking about that, like, is he going to play with like Chetty and whoever they would get with a pick or whatever? I don't know if Richardson qualifies in that way. Like, he's younger. He got, you know, he has a Pablo Torre feature about him, like, so that I get, you know, some cachet, but like I don't know if he qualifies as a blue chipper in the way Justice Winslow does. Like, if you think about like the ceiling for Justice Winslow, like, I think the Kawhi stuff is like, you know, like a lot just because Kawhi is like incredible, but like, if he gets a shot and he can play make and he can keep defending, like, that's a really good player. Like, maybe he turns out to be better than Wiggins, you know, like maybe he's like less. Kind of Wiggins might be this like new Rudy Gay, where like Winslow could be something very moderate and interesting. And I don't know if Richardson like has that. You would know better than me. I just don't know if he has that same growth potential. And I think the key note here is being on the rookie contract is really, really valuable. And like the Cavs, I think, are right to ask for a good young player who's moldable, who can learn from LeBron on a rookie contract.
To add it to the statistical analysis here, Goran Dragic is a career 56% shooter from 3-point range against Golden State. 55.8% in 26 career games. That's impressive. I don't know if that's just a fluke or not. But
Would you take Chris, then, if the Heat weren't willing to part with Winslow, what if they were able to throw in Tyler Johnson and Josh Richardson, right? You get both of those young guys. So instead of one young guy, you get two. Up your chances of one of them being a blue chip. So Whiteside, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson for Kyrie Irving, and then they also take Amon Shumpert.
I think about it, but it also, I think, depends on sort of what the rest of the market looks like.
Yeah.
I think that's like...
Would you prefer Dragic and Winslow to that? Or?
Yeah, I would. I personally
interesting.
Would. Well, here's why. I think, A, you get a replacement for Kyrie who's not on a bad contract.
Right.
Winslow, like, I really, really think what the, what they are looking for as an organization is, like, the chance to get another, like, if you go back and listen to Locked On Cavs or just, like, ever heard me get, talk about them, I do not think the Cavs learned every lesson they should have from the first, from the how LeBron left the first time.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I think this process proves that the way they're approaching this is that they're like, okay, if LeBron leaves next summer, we are not going to end up like we did before. And because if you really think about it and you look at how they got their picks and how they got their young talent, the only way they got out of all of that was luck.
Yep.
They got lucky with that Kyrie pick swap and getting the Clippers pick turning into the pick that became Kyrie. They got lucky to win all those lotteries in a row, to get Andrew Wiggins, to have the right ammunition to trade for a Kevin Love and for LeBron to be born in Akron, Ohio. Like, right. These things are just luck.
Yep.
I think when they look at this their situation, they're saying, okay, we have LeBron James. We would obviously like to keep LeBron James for as long as he wants to play for us. Dan Gilbert himself has said, like, we want him back. Like, he's tied here, but we know, like, we don't control all the cards here. I think they're looking at this and saying, we need a young player who potentially could, like, fill that role to be someone fans can get excited about, and is on a deal that we can really, you know, extend, pay for, and, like, keep and have some control over longer than how, like, Justice Winslow, what, he has, like, 2 more years to hit restricted free agency, right?
Yeah.
Like, how much more time are Richardson, you know, how much longer are those Tyler Johnson's deals? Like, are they actually, like, on the, they're not, like, they would be unrestricted. And then it just becomes this situation where, like, you everything you got for Kyrie moves on. And I think you want, if you're trading Kyrie.
He'll be restricted. Josh Richardson will be restricted after the year. Tyler Johnson, the reason you don't want Tyler Johnson is because his contract balloons to $19 million next year. But
right. That's a problem in itself. But, like, if you're trading Kyrie Irving, who is a 25-year-old multiple-time All-Star, FIBA World Cup MVP, hit the biggest shot in franchise history, you want something sort of rich. And I think that's kind of what they're hunting for here. And I think it's not entirely off the table that they come back to something that's scaled down. That's, like, is just a collection of things. I think all of us would agree that, like, we didn't expect Butler and George to both go for, like, things that were just things. Like, they're not, like, really building blocks anyway, right? But I think, like, that's something, like, that's this process. Unless the Heat call them on and, like, yeah, we'll give you Winslow, Dragic, and, like, some, like, way off pick. Or the Suns call and go, okay, we will give you Josh Jackson, Bledsoe, Jared Dudley, whatever. That's the only way this gets done immediately. And I think the rest of this is, like, how does the leverage work out, and what can the Cavs, like, how can the Cavs drive up the price to where they want it to be? But I also just, and I don't know how much you guys have thought about this, but I just don't know how many teams actually, like, can offer what the Cavs are looking for. That's the other part of this. Like, the Clippers are already out. Like, they've already said, okay, we know we don't have what the Cavs want. So that's interesting too.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, we're talking about this. We're debating all these different potential, you know, trades. And it's like, I mean, I can understand that perspective from Cleveland about what they want to acquire, but I don't think that's realistically out there. I don't think they're going to get what they've been reportedly seeking in their trade value.
The thing with Kyrie, his contract is up in 2 years, right? He's got a player option for the third year, but he's gonna exercise that and become a free agent. So he's going to be a free agent in 2 seasons. If you're Phoenix, yeah, you've got all the horses you need to make the deal, but why would you? Right? Like, Phoenix did this several years ago where they had a promising season and then they just cashed in, right? They just signed every point guard that was available. They tried to make a playoff run. They tried to fast forward their process and it didn't work out last time. I don't see them doing that. They haven't even seen Josh Jackson play an NBA game yet. Why would you? What's the rush to trade him, right? If Kyrie Irving is, if the Cavaliers aren't happy with any of the moves that are out there, you could potentially just wait into the regular season and see what Josh Jackson has got. And if Cavaliers still haven't moved Kyrie Irving at that point, maybe you just offer him then. If you're Phoenix, I don't understand the motivation to get Kyrie Irving if you think he's going to leave in 2 years, because your window isn't within the next 2 years, right? If you're Phoenix, your window is in 4 years, 5 years, 6 years from now. If you're Minnesota, unless you're willing to, Minnesota is on Kyrie's list of desired destinations. But unless you're willing to part with Andrew Wiggins, you've got nothing else to trade. You've got I don't think you should trade Wiggins because he's got two-way potential that Kyrie Irving doesn't. You were a top 10 offense last year without Jimmy Butler. You add Jimmy Butler to that. That's going to be a better offense. You need help defensively, and that's not where Kyrie Irving helps you. You've got your franchise superstar in Karl-Anthony Towns, so it's not like you're desperate for one of those. And Jimmy Butler is your superstar right now. I don't know why, if you're Minnesota, you make a deal for Kyrie Irving. And then what does San Antonio have to offer? What can New York offer? I just don't know what other teams are going to be able to offer. And when you get down to it, Miami is just kind of sitting there with possibly Dragic and Winslow with their hands out being like, hey, like, you still want any of this? And Cleveland might be like, yeah, I guess that's what I'm going to do.
What about Charlotte as a potential trade partner? I've seen that discussed as a Kemba Walker for Kyrie Irving.
I don't hate that. If you did Kemba and like Marvin Williams, like I think that would make some sense.
But if you're Charlotte, do you do that because you're afraid Kemba Walker is going to leave, or do you do that? Like Charlotte's in a position too, right? Where they kind of they're in a position with these next couple of years where they have to do something to shake it up. Is that what you want to do? Move Kemba for Kyrie.
In a basketball sense, it's tough, but like, I think some of these teams, like the Denver, to me is really interesting because it's like, yeah, like you might lose him, and like so maybe you don't want to give up Murray and Harris, right? Like, and I wouldn't do that either. I don't think. But
yeah.
But it's like if you give up one of those guys and you like put Kyrie in there, maybe like you just sucker the Cavs into like thinking Moutier is actually good or something. It becomes interesting, and like the Spurs to me are like to just touch on them for a sec. They're sort of interesting to me because I don't know if they have everything the Cavs would sort of want in a deal. Depends on the pick, I guess. But like, it wouldn't shock me if they called up, you know, Kobe Altman or like, hey, what about Murray, Jontae Murray, Danny Green, and like a pick, you know, and just being like, I wonder if they get offers that are sort of like, I kind of think like Phoenix's baseline level offer, the Heat's baseline level offer, and then the Spurs baseline level offer, like that they could theoretically offer, all sort of end up being not that dissimilar. And I said this to you guys before we started recording. That's why I think if the Heat do offer Winslow, he is the X factor to all of this. Like he is the guy that becomes. He's already on my list of like 10 most intriguing players for next year because I just want to see what he does. Coming off that shoulder injury and like kind of the promise you guys hit on, and he was already like a good defender and he's still so young. And like, how does he fit into the Heat's rotation with everything that has changed while he was out and the success they had? But if like, let's say like the Cavs get offers and it's not, like, there isn't one that just overwhelms the other one. They're all sort of like patchworks of what they want. Like, and if Winslow's part of the Heat's offer, is that like, he's the most interesting piece in that deal in terms of how the Cavs actually value him and how much better they think he could get. Like, that to me is what this kind of comes down to. Because I do think, like, if they had a chart up of the things they're valuing most in that deal, I really, really think a blue-chip guy on a rookie contract is number one on their list.
And he might be the closest thing that's available to that.
Yes.
I mean, it's interesting. It's so hard to tell what Cleveland wants to do. But if Miami's offers Dragic and Winslow every day that goes by without there being a Kyrie Irving trade, that offer, I think, starts to look better and better.
I'd agree.
All right.
I'd agree. Let's wrap it up. Let's just wrap it up on this on one last thing. He comes. Let's say I would say, like, I don't know if, and we talked about it various other deals. But let's just say Dragic. Let's say Dragic and Winslow happens, like that's the deal, and there's like some like whatever, like some pick, like whether it's like a way future first with the heavy protections, whether it's like second round picks, it's like some sort of just tangible pick for Kyrie, and that's the deal. Like, there's no jumper, it's not coming back the other way, like that's the deal. I want to see, where do you guys think that puts the Heat, and how do you think that changes what the Cavs are going to be?
Go ahead, David.
So if they acquire, Miami acquires Kyrie, I think, again, like we've talked before, I think, you know, their ceiling arguably becomes higher, but I think there's going to be some obvious growing pains this year. I think while you get him indoctrinated into the offense, while you get to figure out how everybody else can fit and bend around him, which is, I think, what you're going to promise him, or any team that acquires him is going to have to promise him, is going to be that he's going to be the guy who carries his team, who will have those shots in the clutch. Does that create friction and tension with a guy like Whiteside, who has been known to grumble about touches in the post? But I think, moreover, does that impact Dion Waiters? You know, there's, I think he grew so much over the last season, kind of embracing the role that Miami had created for him, and now to see that slip through his fingers within the course of one offseason, I think could create a lot of tension in that locker room. So I think there'll be problems in the short term. It's tough to gauge exactly what kind of a team this will be, but I'd say they'd probably be even worse than what we projected. Right now we're looking at 48 to 50 wins realistically for this team. I think they would probably be somewhere in the low 40s if they acquire him. And then next year they'd have to make additional moves so that they could take another leap into not just playoff contention, but potentially title contention. As far as Cleveland, I think they would do well. I think they might even do better, to be honest with you. I think, like Wes pointed out, you'd have a freer, looser LeBron James offensively. I think Goran fills a lot of the same holes that Kyrie fills right now. Like I said, he's a better defender. He's a veteran presence. He knows how to understand, and he knows how to fit a role. He had to fit alongside Dwayne Wade a couple of years ago, so I think he understands playing with that kind of superstar mentality that LeBron brings. So I think he'd embrace the possibility of playing for a title. So I think Cleveland would be just fine.
Just to jump on that, I think also Dragic gives LeBron that ball handler that he's been wanting, because, yeah, you lose Kyrie, but Kyrie really wasn't a facilitator, you know? Kyrie was shoot first. Goran Dragic is equal parts shoot and score, right? He is going to have more assists than Kyrie Irving on a Cleveland team, hypothetically. Like, he just will. I don't care that LeBron James is there. And yeah, the Winslow thing would help LeBron. I'm not sure if the team is better. They might be better during the regular season, to be honest, because you have two good pieces in exchange for one. And oftentimes that math works out where that's better for the regular season. In the playoffs, obviously, you're not going to have a player like Kyrie who could just take over a game anymore. It's going to be LeBron and only LeBron. And you're going to have to really rely on your depth there. And you're not adding enough depth that I think it makes up for the loss of Kyrie Irving. But it's the pieces work. And they work better than they work in Miami. I'm all for trading for Kyrie Irving because you need a superstar to win in this league. But David's absolutely right. That completely alters the chemical balance of that Heat team. I mean, one of the reasons Miami brought back all these guys was because that unique blend of egos and personalities meshed really well. But one wrong move can kind of just set the whole atom like apart, and that's, I'm using too many chemistry words. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I just, like, if you push Dion Waiters the wrong way, that confidence goes to a bad form of ego, right? If you push Whiteside the wrong way, that kind of chip on your shoulder turns into like the just something you don't want in that locker room, right? Like, there's these egos are sort of walking on a tightrope, and there's guys like James Johnson and Udonis Haslam and Goran Dragic and you know, the Heat culture on down that kind of bracket them in place. But if you set that off and all of a sudden you throw Kyrie Irving in the mix and you get rid of a guy like Dragic, that really could just scramble everything here. And now Dion Waiters is unhappy. Whiteside isn't getting the touches or the lobs that he wants. And he's got to refine this chemistry for the third year in a row because Dwayne Wade left. And that was his alley-oop guy. Dragic, halfway through the year, figured it out. And then he leaves. And then you had to add Kyrie there. And we don't even know if he is a facilitator in the least, right? So it will scramble a lot of things in Miami. But ultimately, it's just, at the end of the day, I think it's the sort of move you have to do if it's available. But the floor would be lower, but the ceiling would be higher, I suppose.
I would agree with that. I tend to think that the Heat would be a playoff team. I think you're right. Like, I think it gets you a star. I think it gives you someone you can like build around in a way. Like, that's why I think it makes sense for them to do it. With the Cavs, I think it just unlocks some interesting scenarios that I don't know if they would have been there before. I think, you know, you get Dragic and he's going to be really competent. Like, he would be someone who could really handle the ball. And again, it means Derrick Rose is your starting point guard. And it also unlocks these possibilities for Kevin Love that aren't going to be there as long as Kyrie's in Cleveland. I mean, you guys can speak to this better than me, but like Dragic, as far as I've watched him, like can do some stuff where he can move around and kind of just settle into a different role where Kevin Love maybe can do a little bit more. And I think that would be really interesting to see. I also think defensively, you get Justice Winslow. He's a guy that I think makes a lot of sense learning from LeBron. You know, and if you're the Cavs, like if Golden State goes real small, I think your best bet ends up being having, like, I think the defensive stuff that worked best last year against the Warriors was LeBron James roaming off of Draymond Green and not having to defend KD and do all the stuff on offense. If you get this, you can try to Winslow on KD, just have him do as best as he can. Mm-hmm. And you also can have these lineups now where it's, you know, you have guys that are all 6'7"-ish, you know, Chetty Osman, if he's good, Richard Jefferson, J.R. Smith, you know, Shumpert, if he's still on the team, LeBron, Justice Winslow. Like, you can go to that for the first time, and you no longer, I think, have, besides Kevin Love, you will no longer have two just overwhelmingly weak defensive players on the floor at once. I mean, Derrick Rose could be that too. Kyle Korver, there's still questions. And Channing Frye, there's still questions. But it gets you to something closer and more modern that I think would make some sense. And I'm very curious to see how this market shapes out. Because, again, like we've all said this. Dragic and Winslow like could be a floor option that just ends up making some sense for both sides. Especially if the Cavs decide like they need to do this and they don't want to wait until December 15th when a theoretical deal with the Wolves and any other team that has guys that they sign that they would want to trade, those can happen until December. And if the Cavs decide they want to do this before the season, even though they said publicly there's no timeline and sure, we'll bring them to camp, something like this can make a lot of sense in a month.
Yep. Should we wrap it up there then?
Absolutely. Just everyone, make sure you follow me on Twitter at CWMWrights and follow Locked On Cavs at Locked On Cavs.
Yeah, follow Locked On Heat at Locked On Heat. I'm on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
David TRML 13. That's 1-3.
Yeah. Make sure you guys are subscribing to the Locked On Podcast Network on iTunes, Audio Boom. Check us out there. Yeah, Locked On Podcast Network. It's got a lot to offer.
And I'm sure because we just spent almost 50 minutes talking about this trade and like getting into the nitty gritty, Kyrie's going to get traded for like the New Orleans equivalent of Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis like in 10 minutes. Like that's probably going to happen.
The Heat trade Tyler Johnson.
You
that's
get
it.
Alfred Payton. Yeah. Alfred Payton and Nikola Vucevic from Orlando in exchange for Kyrie Irving. That's it.
Look, I'm moving to South Beach if that happens. Like I'm out. Like I'm out on. I'm out on that. But make sure you guys, again, like Wes said, give every podcast. You can subscribe in one feed. It's really easy. That's what I do. I have everything in one feed, so I just pick which one I listen to, and it's really easy. They're all great. You'll learn a lot every day. And thanks for listening to this Locked On Cavs, Locked On Heat crossover show.